sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I am one of your hosts, Sean Sears. Joining me is the other host, Ryan Davis. Ryan, how's your day going, man?
Can't complain so far. Just looking over some of these Zips projections and seeing if there's anything egregious in here. Not so far.
Yeah, they actually look like they made me happy, and that doesn't always happen, especially when Pecota keeps taking away wins from the Cubs because they hate us. On today's episode, as Ryan teased, we'll be talking about the Zip projections here from Fangraphs in our second segment. The first segment, we've got a couple spring training notes to kind of touch on. Yu Darvish apparently wants to throw left-handed, or thinks he can, or apparently can. We'll let Ryan talk about that more. Ian Happ is potentially thinking about playing second base, and the Cubs have announced who will be their first starter for their first exhibition game against the Brewers, which I think is this Sunday. Is that correct?
I think it's Saturday, so coming up soon.
Saturday. This weekend. Yeah, so in a couple days. And then we'll finish up the third segment talking about Manny Machado officially choosing a team. Spoiler alert, it's not the White Sox. Don't tell Kenny Williams. Just kidding. Oh, no. You can tell him. He knows. And then we'll go over a couple quick Cub bullets and wrap the show up here. But before we do that, we do have to talk about our sponsor today, Arizona Office of Tourism. This spring, follow your favorite baseball team to Arizona for Spring Training Cactus League. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. 10 stadiums, 15 teams, 75 degree temperatures, all stadiums in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles of family-friendly resorts, hotels which offer plenty of fun for kids of all ages, from water parks to horseback rides to games and activities. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Once again, that is visitarizona.com/springtraining. So let's jump into this first segment, though. As we were kind of talking about beforehand, Yu Darvish, he's healthy, throwing, apparently with his left hand. I'm looking at this Sun-Times article right now, and I don't understand why, but cool. I don't know what this necessarily adds for Yu Darvish, but I guess if the right arm doesn't work, the left arm could be an option, maybe, right? Hopefully?
Yeah, I don't think so. yeah, I think it's just kind of for fun. I didn't really get the point of the article either, other than just that Yu Darvish can do it, which is kind of cool.
Classic spring training article.
Yeah, that's the news coverage when you're in spring training and you've already written the Yu Darvish's healthy story, and you've already written about who's in the best shape of their lives, but the games haven't started yet. And so here you are, Yu Darvish can throw with his left hand apparently about 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's about 25 miles harder than I could probably throw with my right or left hand. Yeah. So, I mean, that's great. I'm just glad Yu Darvish is out there. Like, it's great to see him throwing. It's nice. I mean, I can go on my USA Today picture finder here with my login credentials and get pictures of Yu Darvish from this year's spring training and not last year's, because that's about all you could find on there was last year's spring training. So it's nice to see he's back, he's healthy, he's throwing, and I guess he can be a part of a story like this. It's nothing more than that, though. I think something more interesting, though, Jun Ho Sung was announced to be the starter for this Saturday's Cubs exhibition game. Obviously, we saw him a little bit last year with the team. We've seen him in Iowa these last couple of years. He's been sort of a mainstay in their rotation. What does this, I guess, mean for a guy like Jun Ho Sung? And obviously the Cubs want to get a look at him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just usually you have a guy who's on your 40-man roster, but maybe not one of your main starters, who takes that first game. I don't know what the thought process is behind that, but I've seen that in years past. It's usually not like John Lester starting game one of the Cactus League. I'm sure it's just they have these guys in their, you know, their projected timelines and all that. But yeah, Jen Hosang, that's a guy that was not necessarily a top prospect, but a guy that pitched well in the minors. I think there was a year where he was the minor league player of the year. Really came into 2016, 2017, where there were some higher hopes for him that maybe he could be like a number five starter. And then last year was just absolutely brutal at AAA. He came up, I think he made one start with the Cubs. It was not good. So he's kind of off the radar, but still a guy. He doesn't throw really hard. He might throw a little harder than Kyle Hendricks, but he's drawn Kyle Hendricks comps. I don't think he has the secondary pitches of Hendricks, but a similar kind of control guy, maybe throws 93 with his fastball at most, 93, 94. So, you know, this is not something to get excited about, but at the same time, he's a player that I want to keep my eye on, see if he bounces back and has a better 2019 season at AAA, because he is on the 40-man roster, and he is a guy who has some talent who the Cubs had high hopes for prior to this year or prior to last year. So if he is pitching well, that could be another guy who's an option in the rotation when you have injuries or you need, you know, a second starter on a doubleheader, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's probably at this point nothing more than depth, but something that you could, I guess, develop or use. At least he's a guy that you could feel comfortable with putting him in a game. Like, if you needed a spot start, you can come up from Iowa. It's not like you're throwing in someone that you've never seen throw before, Anthony Bass or something like that, even though he did pitch well, actually. Yeah. I did think it was interesting. I kind of got, this is kind of irrelevant here, but I got into a Twitter, not argument, but conversation with Zach Cram from The Ringer. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just like their dude who knows everything. He was kind of critical of the Cubs in a podcast, talking about how they didn't have a sixth or seventh starter, and he wasn't confident in their depth. Like, I'm assuming he meant pitching staff, but as well as the entire team. And I kind of talked to him. I was like, well, you know, the Cubs have Mike Montgomery, and he showed last year he was even better as a starter as opposed to being a swingman reliever. I was like, you have Tyler Chatwood, who, I mean, we're not confident, but at least can has been a legitimate starter for teams. And then you've got other guys like Adbert Alizé could potentially be a part of that. Like, you've got some depth, actually. It was just kind of a short-sighted comment, and he kind of defended it a little bit. He was like, well, you know, I do think Montgomery's better in the swing role, and I pointed out, I was like, well, he's actually better as a starter last year, and consistently shown when he gets starts, he's usually better.
His peripherals, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was kind of interesting, but it's crazy to think that a lot of teams and a lot of people just across the league right now just kind of look at the Cubs and not necessarily thinking they're anything more than Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and if Yu Darvish pans out, that's great.
Yeah. But
they don't necessarily think it's anything more than that, which is kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I look at the rotation, I do see depth. I do see, you know, that's why they brought back Cole Hamels, right? So they would have five starters that they feel like they could rely on, and then, you know, Yu Darvish bumps Montgomery to the sixth starter role so long as he's healthy, which so far he is. Tyler Chatwood, I think, you know, we've talked about before, probably will be a pre-2018 Tyler Chatwood, but you can't count on that. And then in the minors, you do have a AAA rotation that I think is maybe not exciting, but, you know, has some guys in it. Alec Mills is a guy who came up and, you know, mm-hmm. pitched in the big leagues last year, started a game for him. Then you've got Duncan Robinson, who's not yet on the 40-man roster, but who has pitched well in the minors. You have Alzolay, like you said. You have Sang. You have Dwayne Underwood if he's in the rotation. So there are some guys that they do have in the minors close to the big leagues who are depth. It's just outside of maybe Alzolay, they're not guys who you could project as starters for your rotation, you know, in years future. It's more just guys who could help out if needed.
Yeah, and that's really what it is. Also, for what it's worth, Yu Darvish apparently was sitting at somewhere between 92 and 94 miles an hour in his most recent live BP session. That's fantastic to hear. If he wants to throw to 96, I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah.
Just food for thought to you.
It's early.
Yeah, right. You got some time. Warm it up a little bit. Another thing that was announced here at the camp, it sounds like Ian Happ was pressing pretty hard to play second base. He told Joe Maddon in a quote, he made it clear to me he wants to be considered to play second. He's looked good in the lineup. He wants me and us to know that he'll do whatever it takes to get in the lineup. I think you and I have talked about this quite a bit here at this point. Yeah, Ian Happ moving to second base, I don't think we have any issue with that.
No, it'd be nice to see him get in the lineup and be able to you know, play a little bit more. We talked about this at a different time where he started 102 games last year despite being healthy. So about two thirds of the games he was starting and in the lineup. He obviously switched in a lot of those other games, came in as a defensive replacement somewhere, pinch hit. But in general, yeah, it would be nice to see a guy with Haps talent who had such a great rookie season in 2017 and then struggled a little bit last year making contact. It'd be great to see another way to get him in the lineup other than, you know, just rotating him with the other outfielders, because you'd like to see Hayward in there most of the time. You'd like to see Almora playing well enough to take that full-time role in center field, and then you'd like to see Schwarber kind of attacking left-handed pitchers well enough to be out there and left more often. So a little more flexibility in how they're using Hap can only be good for everybody.
Let's roll into the second segment. We'll take a look at Fangraph's zip predictions for the 2019 Cubs here on Locked On Cubs. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs. Here in this second segment, we're going to be looking at Dan Szymborski's zip predictions here for the 2019 Cubs. Taking a quick look at here, I didn't see the article quite yet because it came out, I believe, yesterday. But I saw the graphic that he puts out there for the Cubs when he does project the zips. And kind of just quickly glancing at it, it looked good. I mean, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I can get behind the majority of these. And then as you and I were looking at it a little bit more in the break here between these segments, there's a couple glaring things that I think you and I are like, wait, no, that's wrong. I know the first thing you pointed out was Wilson Contreras' OPS of 98, OPS plus of 98. That seems pretty low.
Yeah, it looks like Zips has him as a slash line of 255 batting, 339 on base, 415 slugging. Obviously, that's probably taking heavily into account his bad second half. But I'm guessing if you were doing Zips projections minus that second half last year and just based on everything else, that would probably be very different. So I also looked at Albert Almora. His numbers are actually worse than anything he's done in his career. So I think it might be heavily based on his second half. 271 batting, 308 on base, 383 slugging. That's an OPS plus of 81. That's, you know, pretty much, that would be the lowest of his career at this point. So, so some of the numbers are good. Some of the numbers are not as good. Chris Bryant, a fairly modest season. 123 OPS plus, 4.5 wins above replacement, modest for a guy who's won an MVP. Rizzo is pretty much in line with his career numbers. Javier Baez, if decent but not greatness, 114 OPS plus. I think he hits 30 home runs, 3.8 WAR. So the numbers here are a bit on the disappointing end for a lot of these guys. But again, pretty much everybody except for Baez had a down year last year. So it's hard to justify saying why are these all not projected to be absolutely great when last year a lot of them weren't great.
Yeah, I think what bothers me the most is they had the goal to say Chris Bryant's number one comp was Ryan Zimmerman. Like, are you kidding me? Ryan Zimmerman. Like, I get he's had some really good seasons in, like, recently with the Nationals, but, like, the dude looked like a bust until Bryce Harper came to Washington. So, I mean, I don't know. I just, like, that feels like a slap in the face to Chris Bryant, who's won an MVP, and Ryan Zimmerman's been, like, a failed prospect. Like, I don't know if I'd call him
a failed prospect. He had a couple good years, right?
He's not. No, he's definitely not a failed prospect by any means. But there were definitely, like, there was, like, the first couple years in the Nationals existed. Obviously, he was their first pick and seemed like the guy that was going to carry them on. Obviously, he has done in some ways that. I mean, he's had some 30-plus home run seasons and obviously been an effective player. But I don't know. It just seems like it's not a fair comp to say Chris Bryant's Ryan Zimmerman. I'm sure they're going up stats. I'm sure it makes sense. I'm just in my head like, no, he's better. Shut up. Because I'm being irrational. But yeah, looking at these themselves, so across the board, though, I mean, like, it makes sense what's going on. It's hard to look at the Cubs and be like, you can 100% expect great seasons out of this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy. But there's also a lot of guys where it's like, you're probably lowballing some of these guys here, too. I thought it was interesting, though. I don't know if you looked at the Zips or the starters. They've got they've got Quintana as rated as the highest in terms of zip projections here at 3.9 for them. I'm not sure where that comes from. I'm looking at some of his stats as well. I mean, they've got Quintana tabbed at about a 367 ERA. They think he's going to have 163 strikeouts. That'd be a really good season for him. I don't know if that's what I'm quite expecting. I would say safe bet Kyle Hendricks is probably your best guy in this rotation. They've had him like pretty close to the same for him. Numbers wise, they just have him striking out less guys with more walks. And Hendricks did see his walk rate rise a little bit last year during the first half. But obviously in the second half, I think Kyle Hendricks was finally the guy we expected him to be a little bit. Took him some moments and whatnot. But overall, looking at these projections, it bums me out, but it falls in line with kind of this offseason of like being like, you know, you'd love to get your hopes up, but by the way, it's the Cubs and nothing goes right. So,
yeah. And I mean, you have to look at these, you have to take them with a grain of salt because look at how many guys they, they project them all kind of individually and not based on each other. Right. So, exactly. You have 30 starts from Quintana, 30 from Hendricks, 28 from Hamels, 29 from Lester, 22 from Darvish, 16 from Montgomery, 23 for Mills, 19 for Graveman, who's going to be on the DL all year, 25 starts in the big leagues from Duncan Robinson. So, I mean, you have 19 from Jaime Garcia, who's retired. So you have all these projections that are individual, not based on each other. And I think that's how you have to kind of look at them. So Quintana, that would be a good season for him. Hendricks, might be about where you expect him. I think he's been a little bit better than that. He's a guy who kind of defies the projection system model, I think, mm-hmm. because those rely heavily so much on, secondary
being consistent.
Yeah. Secondary things. And Hendricks just kind of he beats fielding independent pitching with the light contact and the way he pitches. So that's a guy I would say don't really pay attention to projections on him. Always just kind of throw that out and look more at what he does with his career. But yeah, like a lot of these numbers, just not all that exciting. Tyler Chatwood, 5.10 ERA. I think he has 81 walks and 91 strikeouts. I guess that would be an improvement, walking less guys than he strikes out. But yeah, you can't know. I'd love to see a study that goes back and looks at the way Zips and Picoto and how well they nail the individual players. I think they're better about nailing the teams than they are the players. But even Picoto, projecting the Cubs to win 79 games, that's kind of I can't speak to what goes into that because I never have been involved in the Picota side of things at Baseball Prospectus, but I have to think that there are guys wondering, like, are we weighting something too heavily? I think pitch framing is the thing that comes up. The Cubs aren't very good at pitch framing. Is that the thing that is making a, pretty consensus 90-plus win team check in at 79 games?
Yeah, that's what it feels like it is. I hope it's not because that seems silly, but I don't know. Taking a look at the Zips from 2018, they were pretty high in the Cubs for what it's worth. The Cubs had, I believe, five guys with the rated OPS plus over 120, being Happ, Happ, Schwarber, Rizzo, and Bryant. Obviously, that didn't happen. They had a couple guys. Rizzo is about a 5 war. Bryant was at about 6. Addison Russell was at 3, for what it's worth. Javier Baez, 1.7, higher than all those except for the Rizzo and Bryant projection here. Or actually, just above the Bryant projection. That was it. Obviously, it's not always 100% right. This doesn't mean necessarily everything's locked in, as you were talking about here as well. But Ryan, I know you wrote an article about Forbes kind of talking about these projections a little bit more about the Cubs itself. What was kind of your take on this whole thing?
Yeah, it was kind of looking at the way fans are viewing this team going into the 2019 season. Just kind of looking at, what are the expectations? The last few years, obviously, 97 wins in 2015 and an NLCS appearance, 103 wins and a World Series the next year, only 92, and then a trip to the NLCS in 2017, then last year. The kind of whole big debacle with the way the second half went and all the problems, but still won 95 games, which is essentially this exact same team for the most part, minus a few changes. So what are the expectations? What are fans feeling about this team? Are 95 wins, realistic again? Could they be better if a lot of the things that went wrong go right this year? But, I ran a poll on Twitter, almost 500 people voted, about 450 or so, and the majority of people feel like they fall between 87 and 93 wins. And I kind of felt that was a little surprising, but the reasoning everyone seemed to give was the division has gotten so much better. And that's true. You can't ignore the fact that the Reds have been, you know, a 60 plus win team in the 60 range last 4 years. And during that time, I looked up the numbers. The Cubs are 51-25 against the Reds in those 4 seasons. Now the Reds have added Yasiel Puig, Alex Wood, Tanner Roark, a few other guys. I'm forgetting off the top of my head who else they had, but some quality players to a roster that already has some, you know, Joey Votto, Eugenio Suarez, who's probably the most underrated third baseman in the game right now, Scooter Gennett. So this is a team that I think could be your fourth place team, maybe win 81, 82 games. And they're not going to be the team everyone beats up on anymore. The Cardinals, they added Goldschmidt and Andrew Miller. The Brewers didn't add anyone, you know, earth-shattering, but they're still going to be fairly good this year. So it's a tough division. So I see why a lot of fans just aren't that excited about the Cubs, considering they didn't make a lot of changes. But it stands true, you know, you're adding a healthy Yu Darvish in theory. You're adding a healthy Chris Bryant when he basically wasn't for the entire second half. You're hopefully getting better production out of your guys with not a schedule that's absolutely brutal in the second half this year like it was last year. So there are a lot of things going better for the Cubs this year that I think, you know, it's easy to overlook them and say, well, maybe they win 88, 89 games. You know, I just can't find that pessimism unless a whole bunch of things go wrong.
Yeah, that's really where I can't see this team not at least getting to 90, 95 wins plus this season. It would be tough. But yeah, the division is a real aspect that does change things. Like you said, the Reds aren't just a walking home run, you know, pitch machine here for the Cubs anymore. We saw even last year the Reds kind of played them a little bit tougher, but this team is going to have some true pitchers, at least guys that are, you know, deserving to be pitching in Major League Baseball. You're not going to have to worry about guys that you've never heard of stepping up to the mound and trying to do something. The Reds are going to be better. The Pirates should be pretty good. Obviously, Brewers and Cardinals are going to be the two of the better teams in baseball this year. It's going to be more competitive. That being said, if the Cubs' talent shows up and performs the way we expect them to, or is the way they should, this should still probably be a 95-win-plus club, and the Cubs should probably take the division. The question is whether or not we're going to get that group of guys to perform at the level they did. And it's easy to kind of forget how good this team was at times at the first half of the season, just because it does feel like the whole season dragged with their offense just not being able to figure things out. But I think it's, once again, a little silly to think that this Cubs group is going to just miraculously not win 20 games that they won last year. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense how they drop that many wins.
Yeah, it would be really strange, I think, if they didn't have just like a whole barrage of terrible things happen this year and they won less than 90. I would be really curious how that happened. But again, baseball is baseball and teams will do weird things. You'll have teams that have a whole lot of more wins than you expected, and then other teams, like last year, the Nationals, basically a 500 team when everyone kind of expected them to be a 95 plus win team. So things can happen, but it's just hard to look at this roster with these talented players and how so many of them were so bad comparatively last season, and missing guys like Darvish and Morrow. And, you know, it's hard to look at it and say, well, if everyone is healthy and everything goes right, they'll win about as many games as they won last year. And if anything goes wrong, they're an 87 win team. It's just hard to reconcile that for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Hopefully we don't have to worry about trying to figure out how that happens. We can just see the Cubs win 95 wins and be like, ah, we were right, as we always are.
And then the Cardinals win 96 and the Cubs lose the wild card game to the Brewers and everyone's happy. Eat it, Arby's.
That hurt. Yeah. Eat it, Arby's. With that, let's jump into the third and final segment of the show. We'll touch on a couple Cubs bullets and, of course, discuss the Manny Machado signing with the Padres here on Locked On Cubs. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs here in the final segment of our show. We're going to kick off this third segment by talking about Manny Machado. He officially picked a team. He was reported by Jeff Passan and a slew of other reporters. I know Mark Feinstein from MLB.com as well, that Machado had reportedly agreed to a 10-year, $300 million deal with the Padres, falling in line with kind of exactly where he was projected to get at the start of free agency. Surprising to see those money finally come through. However, not totally surprising that it's the Padres. What was your kind of thought when you finally saw that that message roll through on your phone screen, Ryan?
Well, my first thought was after all this and after all the, you know, waiting and everything, he did get the $300 million deal for 10 years. Great for him. You know, he deserved that.
Right?
That's the right, I think, range for him to fall. I can't believe the White Sox bungled it as bad as they did. Unless Machado was really hell-bent on being in San Diego and, you know, a better offer wasn't going to move the needle for him to go to the Sox. Just seems like, you know, the Padres have some great young players in their rebuild, and there might be, you know, a bad year or two before they're ready to contend, just like, you know, with the same with the Sox. But in general, I like the Sox rebuild better, and I like some of their young players better than I like the Padres. And I feel like with Manny Machado, that's a team that, you know, could be a sneaky 2019 NL or AL Central. Well, I keep bungling that, but it could be an AL Central contender, considering that that's a weak division. If they sign Manny Machado, call up Eloy Jimenez, call up Dylan Cease, you know, some of their young players develop. That's a team that I thought could have won 87, 88 games. Without him, they're just kind of spinning their wheels, and it sounds like it's because they weren't willing to give him an opt-out clause.
Right.
I mean, it like they didn't want to guarantee the final 2 years on the deal, which would have taken it to 10 years, $320 million. So it would have been more if it was 2 years that vested based on plate appearances. So, I mean, it's like it was just a really weird way for the White Sox to continue being the White Sox.
Yeah, it just seemed like, why? I mean, if you're going to go all in to this point, you're going to be one of the teams that's really pushing for it. Why would you put some of these silly things in here? Why were you? I mean, like, flat out, players aren't going to sign these big time deals without some type of insurance that they know that at some point throughout this deal, things don't go the way they wanted to, they can leave. And I get teams don't necessarily want to have their big investment be able to back out last second if they're really, truly trying to create a contending team. And Machado, one of those better players out there. But at the same time, you have to do this now. This is how these big deals work out. You've got to work on some type of opt-out clause. You have to, I mean, the incentive bumping up to $300 million, that's greater over $300 million. That's awesome. But I mean, Machado wants to be guaranteed money and not have to work for the price point that he's asking for. And I obviously, that was what the holdup was between them and the Sox. I mean, Machado is continually looking for deals. Good for the Sox to bump the price up as far as they can, but what it comes down to is they didn't feel like they needed or wanted to spend that kind of money on a player, and I can understand it. Their fans definitely don't, though. Their fans are livid, and it's just, once again, falling into that narrative of the Sox being cheap.
Yeah, they don't really have that much on their long-term payroll or even their short-term payroll, so it really doesn't make any sense not to go out and add a guy like that. And immediately after, you hear that basically, you know, Harper's still out there, but the Sox had no interest in signing him after losing out on Machado. And it just felt like, I was trying to think of the best example. I tweeted something about how, like if you're sitting down to play Mortal Kombat and your friend takes Sub-Zero and you're so angry about it that you decide you don't want to get saddled with having to use Scorpion or Liu Kang. You just decide you don't want to play anymore. Like that. Like that's kind of what it seems like they're doing. Like they lost out on Machado, and rather than make a serious offer to Harper, they're just like, "Well, fine, screw you guys, we're going home."
Yeah, I just don't. You know what? And I know a lot of fans were screaming that, like, you know, that maybe they weren't even interested to begin with, and you know that they were just trying to appease a fan base. No, they don't put close to over to $300 million of potential earning for a player on the table as like a just like feel good story for their fans to feel like they're involved. Like they were definitely in this. Yeah. It just seems like if there ever were players that you would want to spend this kind of money on, Harper and Machado seem like those guys. And if the White Sox, I mean, I saw something on Reddit yesterday that the White Sox, I think the Athletics and one other team could offer Harper and Machado a 10-year, $1 billion deal and still not be in the top five of baseball spending. Like, think about that for a second.
Yeah, that's $100 million a year. That's, you're right. That would be absolutely true. Yeah, just,
I mean, you'd have a bag of balls and Bryce Harper, but I mean, you know, you'd have Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how well that works out for the Nationals the last few years, except they actually had some talent around Harper.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, it's just a sad environment for the way free agency is moving, and you know, we could probably talk about this all day, but you know, we're in our final segment. What other interesting bullets do we have?
No, that's it. That's the only thing, Ryan. Oh. I'm kidding. Tim Kurkjian, I thought this was funny, was walking to one of the clubhouses today, was asked, you know, he was getting ready to show his press pass to be let in, and the guy at the door said, "Oh, you don't have to show me that. I know who you are. I've been reading you and watching you for years. Great to see you, Peter." Remind you, that was Tim Kurkjian he was talking to.
Yes.
We, Ryan and I, think we assume it's probably Peter Gammons.
Yeah,
but
national guys. Yeah, that would be the assumption.
Yeah,
I've had a similar faux pas. I won't get into it, but I've, on more than one occasion, I've accidentally referred to somebody by the wrong name. May have been an issue where I walked up to a locker and asked a player to speak, and then realized after asking like the first two questions that he was not the player I thought he was. But yeah, no, that happens. It's embarrassing, but yeah.
I mean, we've all called our teacher mom before, right? I mean, that's happened.
Of course.
Another quick tidbit here as well. Javier Baez was talking to reporters and just kind of uncoerced, impromptu dropped that he needs to walk more. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Obviously, Dave Kaplan talked about on the show yesterday, Javier Baez walks more. He's going to see more pitches that he eventually can hit, and overall makes him probably a better hitter. I agree with that to an extent. It's not as simple as that sometimes. But, yeah, if Javier Baez wants to walk more, ultimately that's going to make him a more effective player.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's I think saying walk more is being a little too simplistic with it. I think the correct way of nailing it would probably be more selective. You know, don't swing at the pitches that are, you know, sliders in the dirt and sliders in the left-handed batter's box. Those are the ones that are going to get Baez in trouble. If he shows he can lay off that, he will walk more. And he'll also get better pitches in general.
Right. And then the last thing I saw, the Chicago Tribune put out an article that was basically catering to Cubs fans who felt that they could not cheer for the team anymore and how they could get acclimated into becoming a White Sox fan. And it was just a really, really weird article.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read that or not. It just kind of read to me like a BuzzFeed article. So it was really weird that it was coming from like Steve Rosenblum from the Tribune.
You see, I saw it, but I didn't click it. And now that you say Steve Rosenblum, it all makes so much more sense.
Yeah, it was just disappointing. I don't really know. I can't view the stupid article now because, of course, the Chicago Tribune has capped my 5 free articles for the month because, you know,
go incognito.
The biggest newspaper.
Yeah, make sure to go incognito so you can read that one.
I'm doing it right now. But yeah, I mean, if you guys want to check it out, go ahead and do so. It's not anything that's really worth your time, but the way it reads and the way, yeah, it's just not anything anyone needs to be reading. So disappointing, kind of stupid, whatever. I mean, it's gonna get clicks.
Yeah, instead go read something we wrote.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still Rosenthal, excuse me. Not much better.
Yeah. Okay, so unfairly dumped on Steve Rosenblum, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Steve Rosenblum. I'm sure you'll earn it eventually, but not now. but with
thanks
that,
for listening to Locked On White Sox.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. Of course, you can follow Locked On Cubs on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow myself or Ryan Q Davis, and Sean R. Sears. With that, we appreciate you guys listening, and go Cubs.